A favorite theme for Hollywood movies is the angry, vengeful robot, the beautiful android who turns on her creators. In fact, many of the first robots were women, and they were adored and admired more than 200 years ago. In late 18th century Europe, life-size androids built to look like women dazzled wealthy aristocrats. They wore fashionable gowns. They could look around. They could even play musical instruments. Historian Heidi Voskel tells the story in her book, Androids in the Enlightenment. Raymond Tangekar talked with her.
So Heidi, I gotta say, I was floored when I learned that people were actually creating androids in the 18th century. I mean, why would anyone in that period want to make this human-looking robot?
One reason would be that there was craftsmanship and artisanship around already in the 18th century. Particular furniture making and clock making had been around for quite a while and was slowly approaching some kind of culmination in the middle towards the late 18th century, when the social and the economic system on the European continent was following a court society and an estate society. And what they needed to keep up this ostentatious lifestyle and to show off their political power was what we call spectacles, and they needed those in their households. For example, very sophisticated clocks or furniture, as well as mechanical gadgets or toys inside of this furniture. And we could think of these androids as extensions of the existing commodities that were already produced in these workshops.
So basically, I mean, these were objects that the aristocracy would show off to others. Can you describe the woman who plays the harpsichord?
Sure. The woman who plays the harpsichord, she was made in Switzerland in the late 1760s and early 1770s. She's about a bit more than 4 feet high, sits on a stool in front of a harpsichord. So she's at eye level with a seated spectator. There are two mechanisms inside of her. One mechanism moves her hands above the keyboard horizontally to the left and the right, and the other mechanism moves her fingers up and down as soon as her hand is on the right position above the keyboard. There's a couple of other important mechanisms inside of her. One makes her eyes move as if she was following the motion of her hands above the keyboard. And the other very important mechanism is inside her chest, makes her chest move up and down as if she was breathing. So when you sit in front of this automaton, first she just starts looking at you, then she starts breathing, and then she starts playing the harpsichord. That is how the mechanism is programmed, as it were.
I've seen videos of this, and I gotta say, like, it's a little creepy, right? She's looking at you, and she's breathing. She's really realistic and lifelike.
Yeah, yeah. The understanding that it's creepy, or often we say uncanny, that is language that was developed a little later in the 19th century, beginning with Sigmund Freud. He read a piece of fiction, a literary story by E.T.A. Hoffmann about an automaton that was very different from the one that I saw. But then Freud built the notion of the uncanny into his theory of psychoanalysis and into the theory of the return of the repressed. And that became so popular and it stuck so well that to this day, we like to use terms like creepy or uncanny to describe androids.
So who actually created this android?
So this was a father and son team of artisans. They were both clockmakers in the mid to the late 18th century in Switzerland, in the far western part of Switzerland near the French border. We know that they were both very gifted clockmakers, and the father, Pierre, was in a position to send his son, Henri Louis, to university in Nancy in France. And when his son returned, that's when they started the production of this harpsichord-playing woman automaton. And he studied music, drawing, and mechanics, his son. So he probably brought some skills with him back from university to help his father build this automaton.
I'm kind of surprised to hear that it was actually a clockmaker that created this. I mean, based on how intricate and complicated it is, I would think that, you know, like a leading engineer or something would have been the inventor of this.
Yeah. Engineers didn't really come into being as a profession until 100 years later. So the clockmakers at the time was actually the artisans and the furniture makers and the carpenters and the piano makers. They were the ones who knew most about how to build intricate mechanisms.
Well, and it turns out that this harpsichord playing android, it still exists, right? It's in a museum in Switzerland.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And,
yes.
You know, I saw a video of it, and it's just stunning. It's incredible. And I'm saying this in 2015. I can only imagine how much of a spectacle it must have caused back in the 18th century.
This was a very specific moment for such sophisticated mechanical work. If you want to measure the sophistication of mechanical precision and ingenuity, that sort of peaked right around that time, because there was a market for these things that could be sold. Once the Industrial Revolution kicked in, commodities were made smaller, simpler, and much cheaper for a much broader audience of people to buy them. I like to say that they were in competition with other spectacles. So if you and I had been members at the time of a very thin crust of aristocracy, we would be wandering around and hanging out with other aristocratic families. And at their houses before dinner, we would probably be exposed to their toys and their mechanical toys. So I want to say that we would be used to watching spectacular things.
Huh. So maybe in other words, it's you're basically flaunting your might by showing off these ostentatious objects.
Yeah. Yeah. We are at a time, if I can quickly add this, where these aristocratic lifestyles and some middle-class lifestyles already mesh with each other and start mixing, and then the whole thing breaks down with the French Revolution in 1789. So we are looking at a period right on the cusp of the end of this court society.
Well, I want to go back to this harpsichord playing android just for a second. And earlier you mentioned that, you know, its eyes, it appears that it's looking at you, it appears to be breathing.
Mm-hmm.
It also kind of moves in a very specific and interesting way. It's almost like emoting and performing.
Yes.
Why was that? Why was it important for the creator to actually include that?
So that goes back to the politics of the 18th century. What we see is middle classes, or we call them bourgeois classes, developing techniques and practices of hanging out with each other, of socializing. And among those practices was conversation, of letter writing, of friendship, and there was an element, an emotional element in there. There was an idea of sentimental activity. So the entire shift from a court society to a civil society happened, among other things, through a culture of sentiments. And this, it's almost a cliche that a young woman would be playing the piano, and that altogether was considered to be the practice and the construction of a virtuous, sentimental member of a civil society.
Huh. So you're basically saying that this isn't simply like a cool robot that plays music. It's actually demonstrating in a way what it means to be like a virtuous person, or?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, you're saying people at the time were actually kind of examining what it means to be human by looking at a robot.
Yes, exactly. And maybe you can wonder if we are doing the exact same thing right nowadays. They were trying to figure out what humans are, and the specific political situation made them ask very specific questions about what it means to be human in specific political and cultural ways.
Heidi Voskel is a historian of technology at the University of Pennsylvania. She talked with Raymond Tangekar about her book, Androids in the Enlightenment. And if you want to see some of those 18th century robots, visit our website. It's at ttbook.org.